Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As part of the LGBT Health Summit, we're going to have a poetry evening with Christine Burns entitled Fishing for Birds. Okay.
Oh my God. They say you should do something every day that scares you. Well, I've been saving up for about 3 months. But I brought a little friend with me as well, just to help, one of my teddies. And that's very convenient, because that's where I'm going to start, in praise of teddies. There is nothing to equal a teddy. The stuffing in men's not the same. And though I've known some just as furry, a teddy's far easier to tame. A teddy is so understanding. They cuddle enough, but no more. They won't run away with the duvet, and I've not known a teddy to snore. A teddy does not cut his toenails beside in the bed while you lay. And, very endearing to females, a teddy won't outlive his stay. The teddies I know don't like football. They don't think of sex all the time. And teddies don't have sweaty armpits. Or at least I've not noticed with mine. Most teddies don't show off or argue. They don't sit up watching TV. Mine lies on the pillow just waiting, with eyes that are only for me. With Teddy, I'm really quite happy. I love him, and I know he loves me. So, to men with designs on my body, get stuffed, and then maybe we'll see. Okay, well, that was a little bit unashamedly heterosexual, I do confess. I think, to make up for that, I'll do a little bit about pussies. Now, this story is, like so many of my poems, it's based on a real experience of a very dear friend of mine who lives in Brighton. And a home is to a dog, a cat, three students, and the largest collection of porcelain dolls you've ever seen. And I was staying with her for a poetry weekend some years ago, and I can't remember how we got into this conversation, but one of her tenants was discussing the fact that she thought she'd seen the ghost of Alice's dead cat in the kitchen. And so we talked about this, and the more we talked, the more we realised that other people in the house had shared this experience as well, and that actually the kitchen really was haunted by the ghost of Alice's cat. So that got me thinking about what this cat was doing in its 10th life. And so I bring you the 10th life of Alice's cat. The first thing that strikes about Alice's cat is not Oscar's colour. No, it's not that. But there's nothing remarkable in black and white fur. And his tail and his whiskers would not cause a stir. At least if it wasn't for one awkward fact. And I'm struggling to find how to put this with tact, and clearly you might think that I'm being unfair. But Oscar, you see, should not really be there. The cat that you see down there by the shopping does not think that death's a good reason for stopping the love he's pursued now for 9 lives already, which is to make sure that there's fish in his belly. And so, if you see him, apply the house rule. Be firm, and make sure you can see on 04, for dead cats must learn there's a way to behave if they can't be content to just lie in their grave. Be firm and repeat this unwavering refrain, but do it alone or they think you're insane. You're not getting fed, so just stop that meowing. You've had your 9 chances to practice devouring, and 10 strikes us all as a little bit greedy, and frankly the living are slightly more needy. Get back in that hole which we dug beneath the tree, or your mistress will stuff you with kapok. You'll see. Now, I sort of had a run of writing poems about cats. You might recognise the metre of this one a little bit, particularly if I tell you it's called Walter de la Mare's Cat. "Is there anyone there?" said the poet's cat, scratching at the kitchen door. As the wind sent the leaves a-scurrying over the concrete backyard's floor, yet no one stirred in that human's house. Not a soul was raised by the call, and the cat sadly turned to resume its prowl. 4:30 is a bad time to call. I must go back to the vets again. To that vet who'll kill my fleas. For the wretched things have made me itch. I'm a cat that's ill at ease. And all I ask is a warm hearth and a fire to stretch before. To close my eyes and dream of mice and forget the dog next door. Now, as I said, some of my poems have stories behind them, which I suppose actually the majority do. Even my teddy friend poem is an expression of realising one night on my way to bed that I'd found a very nice way of doing it out people in that bed. So long as you've got a teddy, you're never alone. Well, actually, so long as you've got fleas, you're never alone either. Those poems, though, were written around about the mid-1990s. But the very first poem I wrote, because we've all got to have one. Excuse me, I've got to get rid of my friend here. I've got cramp in my left foot as well. The very first poem I wrote was sometime in 1974. I was a student just down the road from here in Chandos Hall in the university. And I'd gone to bed, and it was a perfectly ordinary night. And then I woke up about 2:00 in the morning and I'd got a line in my head. I'd never ever thought about writing poetry before, but I couldn't get rid of this line and I thought, what am I going to do? So eventually I got up and I wrote it down and I wrote out the rest of it. And eventually after about 30 minutes I'd written the entire poem. And that was okay then, because I put it down, turned off the light, went back to bed and had a good night's sleep and woke up in the morning. Did I really do that? So it was called Thoughts. A bit more serious. I'm thinking of life in an offhand way, scratching around for the words which will say that life's for the living, but full of the giving as much as you can to your fellow man. Don't fritter your living away. I'm thinking of love in an offhand way, and hoping that maybe there will come a day when all men are brothers, a world full of lovers, peace for the taking and no more aching. Don't fritter your loving away. I'm thinking of you and trying to say that, oh, how I wish I could relive that day when we were together, two birds of a feather. I threw you away on that fateful day. I frittered your feet, your being away. Now, I sort of carried on in the same sort of vein for about 18 months. And then I got to a poem that I started, and then something sort of went wrong in the middle and I got stuck. It's called Writer's Block, and it starts out like this, and then I'm going to stop in the middle to explain the rest. With painted words and simple rhyme, I searched to find some key that would say it all, expressing all that's me. One verse of awful beauty is all I seek to find, and yet the words refused to come from out my adult mind. And at that point I stopped and I put the manuscripts away and buried them and got on with doing other things. I had bigger things on my mind at the time in the mid-1970s and ran away from a PhD and tried running away from everything else and eventually ended up back where I started and finally got around to doing what I should have done in the first place. But it was only later, when I began to write poetry again, because I discovered a friend who encouraged me to do so, that I found that I could actually continue this poem. So now you might see it, notice there's a slight difference in style when I came back to it. I'm thinking, drinking, linking vowels, wishing, swearing, emptying bowels, loving, leaving, breaking hearts, a moment's hope, one more full start. The pen is dry, the mind is too. Hoping that the words come through is pointless, wasted time. What's in a rhyme? Now, the reason I came back to poetry was because I began to find, some years after, lots of traumas that I actually needed to be able to express them. It's funny that you sort of, when you're going through big things in life, sometimes you don't actually deal with them at the time, and they sort of catch up with you later. And I was doing some catching up in big time. And this is perhaps the most cathartic poem I've ever written. There used to be a school of thought, whether you were transsexual or, I suppose, gay or lesbian or whatever, that people would express to you that you should go off and get married and have children and that would make a man of you and it'll all be okay, don't worry, you'll be cured. Well, they were wrong. The trouble is, when you do that, of course, you acquire all sorts of messy baggage, and that baggage then needs to be dealt with. In my case, it was a very, very sad parting that I had with my partner. The more so because I think at the time we probably still basically liked each other. But this is called Ticket to the Edge of Despair. But the important bit on the end is the word return, because it's a return ticket. Divorce was wretched, nearly fatal. Losing friends, a home, a future, grateful for the few who knew, who understood and tried to be near and reach out when I cried. Days made long by hours formed weeks, and loss made worse when no one speaks. The phone, it hardly ever rung, and when it did, I could have sung, only disappointed again. The same, oh me, I'm fine, refrain, echoing in my heart after the call, and once again alone in the hall. Weeks make months, and seasons passed, with minor triumphs lost in vast and never-ending tracts of doom, all swallowed by that sense of doom. And those who cared could only shake their heads and say, I'm worried, will she be okay? Is she all right to leave alone? Perhaps it's best they hadn't known how tempting it, the dead of night, it was to throw the towel, the fight. I cannot say for certain when it passed, or when sweet sanity at last began to win back ground again, but slowly it began to change. The seasons coming round seemed brighter to this near exhausted fighter. And pleasures, near forgotten, lost, began to melt the winter's frost. And spring this time could warm my soul, the shattered jewel once more made whole. Self-respect began to show. I grew my nails, began to know the things that I had achieved were mine. And some wounds can be healed in time. And growing bolder every day, a rediscovered sense of play allowing me to advertise, at last come free of history's ties. Till now you would not know to look how close a step to death I took. In time, I probably will forget the blackness that was with me, yet I'll not forget the people who, by how they listened, saw me through. The precious few who didn't scatter, the real friends who will always matter, who didn't try to organise my life or seek to trivialise the strife. They'll know their names, as I do too. And I dedicate these thanks to you. It was a pretty lonely time when everybody runs away from you. And you become very dependent upon trying to read into what's happening. When you look at the telephone, you think, well, I rang them last week, isn't it about time they rang me? So this sort of expresses that feeling, and I'm sure that we've all been there at some time. It's called It's Good to Talk. Perhaps the bell's not working. Perhaps the line is down. Perhaps they may have lost my number. Perhaps they're out of town. Perhaps they may have just forgotten. Perhaps they mean to say, perhaps it's time to stop pretending. Perhaps Perhaps we've had our day. Perhaps it's only ever been one-sided. Perhaps they've been polite. Perhaps I've simply failed to notice. Perhaps I know they're right. Perhaps I'll give it one more try, though. Perhaps they'll say they're glad I've called. Perhaps I'll listen to their problems. Perhaps I'm being fooled. Perhaps I'll tell them what it feels like. Perhaps they'll understand and say, perhaps it's time they called me sometimes. Perhaps one can but pray. I feel like a change of mood. I'm just trying to think where I am. This is a little poem that actually was inspired by a friend of mine who is a very out lesbian counsellor. And we'd been having a heart-to-heart about the problems we'd had in our relationships. I'd been having a particularly mucky time with somebody, and she'd just been having a mucky time as well, and we were comparing whether it was any different having relationships, you know, heterosexual relationships and lesbian relationships. And she expressed to me the idea that one of the advantages to her of her lesbian relationship was that there was far more equality, and that some days, because my complaint was that I was feeling a bit put upon emotionally, that I was always the shoulder to cry on, and he was having, you know, using that will. And she said, well, you know, I feel that with the good relationships, we can be the other side on different days. You know, I can be the little one, and she can be the big one, and so on. So that sent me away to think about that overnight, and I came back the next day with size doesn't matter. Have you heard that expression somewhere before? What size today, dearest sister? Are you the big one or small? Are you the one who needs suckling? Or are you the one who stands tall? If you're the big sister today, then there's much that I need to discuss. But if you feel weak and unsure, love, I'll take up the mantle, no fuss. What size today, dearest sister? Are you the big one or small? I wanted this chance just to say, sister, that it really don't matter at all. Now this one is what I call my medicine cabinet poem. It's a good way of actually getting the out if you're feeling cross with somebody. It's entitled Greed, and you might identify people in your life from the text of this. Greedy for love, she gets it. Finds it's not to her taste. Chosen too much haste. Abuses it. Loses it. She's poor. Greedy for riches, she bitches. Finds the work is too much. Responsibilities such a bore. She's sure there's more. Greed will destroy her. She wants all. Finds enough is too little. An emotional cripple. She takes, but aches, I'm sure. Which brings us on to bastards. This poet's a lover of bastards. The men and the women, you know, whom each of us has to cross swords with, wherever in life you may go. The average bastard's a nice soul, or so it would seem at the start. They'll make you quite welcome, then stab you. For bastards, we know, have no heart. But bastards, for all that, have uses. Why else would a poet take pen and put all their feelings to paper? For flowers don't rhyme quite like men. If the seas suck them all down tomorrow, if the Lord took his vengeance, what then? Could a field full of daffs light my candle? No. What would this poor poet do then? So maybe we'll keep them on license, with a ball and a chain round their feet. Make love when it's rainy on Wednesdays. Hang on now, I'm coming now, sweet. one's a little bit twisted. I can't understand how I managed to do it, but you might recognise a certain well-known telephone counselling organisation whom I had a little argument with. I'd like to think they lost. Mummy, oh, the other thing is you have to stretch your imagination here, because there's two parts to this, but there's only one of me. And there are psychiatrists in the room, so I've got to be careful how I split this. So one little part of me, because it doesn't rhyme with little girls, has to be a little boy. And the other has to be his mother. But I think you'll figure it out, you know. Mummy, there's a man out on our doorstep. That's a little boy, by the way. Did you recognise it? Can you tell what it is yet? Mummy, there's a man out on our doorstep. He's bleeding. Can you please help him? Come. Here comes Mummy. I'm sorry, but I'm listening on the telephone. You know I'm a Samaritan, my son. Mummy, please come quick. The man is dying. Oh, can't you call an ambulance, pray? Oh, no. I must respect his independence. But say I'll come and listen if he'll stay. Mummy, now the man is begging for you. He says he needs your help to save his life. He knows your work is frightfully important, but Daddy says to point out you're his wife. I don't know if this works. Actually, this is actually written the same weekend. It was a hell of a weekend with these people, I'll tell you. It was a three-poem weekend. And the third one, I'm not going to read. I'll probably get arrested. It's called Yes, I Sympathise, But. A rule is a rule, as a rule. The refuge down ages for fools. I can't tell you the facts, for the law can't relax. I can't tell you of beatings, they've moved it in meetings. I can't tell you of murder on pain of their perder. And if ever I'm critical, they'll say it's political. I can't point at the cruel for the sake of their rules. So I'm bound and I'm gagged, and in files I am tagged as a wicked protester. Keep your eyes peeled. Don't let her. What? Let on to the masses how feeble and crass is the state's grip on morals. Quarrels, yes. We see those on nightly TV. The stage shows for free. But why not look deeper? Can you? Can you do that for me? This is where I come to a close with a final poem, and it's actually the poem that gave the final name to the collection. It goes back to the spring of 1996 when I was on holiday in New England, and I'd stopped off in Boston, and my manicurist had said, if you're passing through Boston, will you pop into the Cheers bar and buy a t-shirt for my husband? So I did my little duty, and I was walking around and walking back across Boston Common, and I found a man who was in a wheelchair, and he was flying a kite. And if you imagine, if you're wheelchair-bound, it's rather difficult normally to fly a kite. And his solution was to put this kite string through a fishing rod, and then he could sort of whip it backwards and forwards. And he was having a bit of difficulty getting the kite off the ground, and people were just pushing past him. And I stopped and went back and said, can I help you? And he said, well, if you just hold the kite up, we'll get in the air. And then he beckoned me over, and he gave me lessons in how to fly a kite. And I thought, this is great. And then he bummed a kiss, and he got my email address, and we sort of corresponded for years after. And his name is Richard Troyes, and he referred to his hobby as kite fishing. And so the idea of fishing for birds really quite appealed to me. And so I came home and I wrote this poem. He was fishing for birds upon Boston Commons, baiting his line with a kite flying high. So I stopped to talk, which I like to do often, and that's how I met a remarkable guy. His fishing rod strained as he patiently taught me the wheelchairman's technique for flying a kite. And I saw as it soared his magnificent irony, and I learned how we all can fly high if we might. The man who could not walk was flying with sparrows. His mind focused up there, so obviously free, and I've wondered some days since that night on the common why God had arranged that encounter for me. Thank you very much. Good night.